Welcome back to the Cape Copcast, the official podcast of the Cape Coral Police Department. I'm a public affairs officer, Lisa Greenberg.
And I'm Officer Mercedes Simons, and together we make up the public affairs office for the Cape Coral Police Department.
Yes, so today we have a really special guest on the Cape Copcast. We have Captain Brand Chenault. He's the captain of the Patrol Bureau. And I know as someone who's still pretty new to working for the police department, I found this interview extremely helpful in learning a lot about kind of the inner workings of the Patrol Bureau. And also it was nice just to learn a bit about him himself.
Yeah, he doesn't just have a great personality, but he's also one of the longest standing police officers at the department. I think he said he's hired in 94. And so he's able to share kind of a lot of different wisdom and stories. And he was in the Marines. He just has a really cool history background, and he's just an overall really cool guy. And I know, you know, in terms of being the patrol captain, he's very well respected amongst all of patrol. He's a really good leader that we have here.
I think it's interesting, too, because he kind of spoke to the evolution of the department and also talked about, you know, how he kind of blends like an old school mentality with the new school to kind of create where we're at today.
Yeah. And I think that's why he's where he's at, is because he sees it from both sides. He sees things of like, this is what it means to be a police officer, and it always has, but this is how we've evolved and here's why. And I think that's just one of the things that makes him really great.
Super interesting. So should we bring him in?
We should bring him in.
All right, let's do it.
Today we're here with Captain Brand Chenault. We were really looking forward to talking with him. We first introduced him in a video on social media where he's talking a little bit about his prior Marine experience and then how he became a cop from there. So I think we're really just excited to sit down with you, tell your story, and go from there.
Well, that's awesome. I'm happy to be here.
We're happy to have you. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how long you've been with the police department.
Well, we'll start off with the law enforcement. I started working with the Cape Coral Police Department in 1994.
Awesome.
So this is my 30th year that I am in with the Cape Coral Police Department.
Are you the longest standing police officer we have at the department right now, or is there someone outside of you?
I am it. I am the longest tenured police officer with the city.
That's an accomplishment.
Right? So, okay, now we can say we have the, maybe not oldest,
no,
but perhaps one of the most wise police officers sitting here with us to give us a little insight. I mean, you're one of the people that I go to if I have a question about, hey, we have this Throwback Thursday. Do you know any of the people in it? And usually you do.
Yeah,
so that's a pretty good indicator.
I usually worked with all of them, so.
Yeah.
How cool.
All right. So, why don't we start with talking a little bit about your experience with the Marines?
Okay.
Go for it.
I'll go back over.
Yeah. So tell us about your Marine experience.
Yep. I actually joined the Marine Corps in 1989 when I graduated high school. I served for 8 years in the Marine Corps. I was an amphibious assault crewman. Basically, better lack of words, it's a tank that floats, comes out of the back of the ship, because the Marine Corps is amphibious, you know, for doing amphibious assault landings and stuff like that. Also, I served in the Gulf War. You know, I spent like 2 years over there in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. Saw a lot of action there.
Wow.
And then when I actually got off of full duty in the Marines in 1993, and I actually applied with the Cape Coral Police Department, went to the police academy, and was hired by Chief Arnold Gibbs in 1994.
I'm curious, what made you want to be a police officer after all of that experience?
Well, it was kind of different because, you know, nobody in my family had the same question, because, you know, they all respected law enforcement, but most of my family, father, grandparents, uncles, they were all military. You know, I mean, there's a Chenault that's been in pretty much every war that this country's ever been in when they went through like the family tree.
Wow.
So when I found out, you know, I originally was like, well, I like the Marines. You know, I like the structure. So I figured, you know, I was going to get out, and, you know, I figured law enforcement was about as similar, you know, not as strict maybe as like the military or the Marines are, but a little more structured, you know, rank based. You know, I kind of gravitated to that. And, you know, I had a calling to go in the military, and I went in with my eyes open, knowing what the, you know, potential consequences are of joining the military. So that's how I ended up applying, and, you know, was lucky to be hired by the Cape Coral Police Department.
Why did you get out?
That was a tough decision, because, I mean, originally I thought about, you know, really wanting to stay in, and but at the time, family, stuff like that, it was just seemed like the right thing to do was to, you know, create another career path. And in the long term, now looking back, I'm glad I did.
Yeah. And I know not to say that you were a Marine. Once you're a Marine, always a Marine. So we're not ready to say that.
There is no former Marine. Obviously, you've seen in my last, you know, when we did our last interview, my office is pretty full of Marine.
Yeah.
Even though it's been that long, you never forget. Because the one thing about Marines is I could run into a Marine that I never met, maybe served in Korea or Vietnam, and we could start talking like we were best buddies. Because they all know they've all done similar things.
Right. Right. And I do have a question too. What led you to Cape Coral?
Well, actually, when we moved to Lee County, when I was going into high school, I actually went to Riverdale High School.
Nice.
So my father was a former Marine, and we moved here, you know, to Lee County. And so I got to know a lot of the, you know, the deputies and stuff, because that was out, you know, kind of rural Lee County. So when the natural place to come back was where my family was. I mean, my family's all pretty much in Florida. You know, my parents eventually moved to, you know, Punta Gorda, and then I have family in Gainesville. So it seemed like the right spot to come back to. I've always liked this area.
It's a great area. Yes. I'm a little biased. I'm from Southwest Florida too, so I get it.
I'm one of the rare people that were actually born in Florida.
Yeah.
And stay in Florida. I was born in Daytona Beach.
And your whole family is here too, if I can talk about them. They're great. Your son actually, did your son ever join the military at all? I know he's a cop.
Nope. He didn't. He did not join the military. None of my kids. And I kind of figured that was kind of my path. You know, I never steered them away from it, but I made sure that, you know, as they got old enough to kind of understand, like in high school, he wanted to go to school and then he wanted to be a police officer. So I gave him all the pros and cons. You know, there's a lot of, you know, especially when you have a family, there's a lot of holidays you miss, a lot of birthdays, a lot of anniversaries because you have to work. So I made sure that he knew going into it, you know, there's a lot of benefits, but there's a lot of stuff that you know, especially if you're starting a new family.
Yeah. I think that's the good part about law enforcement, though. Like, that was the draw to me, because I think a lot of people in law enforcement have also considered joining the military in some fashion, but it's great because it's, you know, we're kind of like a paramilitary organization.
Yes.
It's somewhat modeled after that. You know, we're the local, almost like local military. We protect the community that we serve directly. But it's nice that you actually get to go home and see your family, even if you're working holidays. I think that's the big win for law enforcement versus the military. But how was your transition from the military to being a cop? Was that difficult?
Actually, it was a little tough because, you know, you kind of think, you know, because I didn't have any family members that were, you know, in law enforcement to kind of lean on and go, you know, what do you think, or what's going to happen? So I kind of, you know, as a 23-year-old, you know, just out of the Marine Corps, starting with the Cape Coral Police Department, I kind of figured it was a lot similar to things that procedures and stuff like that in the Marines. And then when I got here, I realized, no, it's similar, but not the same. You know, you know, like you said, we are paramilitary. We do have like a rank structure. I mean, we have a chief, deputy chiefs, you know, captains, lieutenants, sergeants, but it's a little bit different on how they train them and stuff like that. Because like in the Marine Corps, they train, you know, if you're a sergeant, they teach you to do the lieutenant's job. They always teach you one rank higher because, unfortunately, if you end up in combat and somebody goes down or gets injured, you know, the person beneath them has to take their job. So you're always learning. You're always learning. But it was a little tough at first. When I first started, I kind of went and talked to the recruiters a couple of times just to check on, you know, maybe wanting to go back into Marines, but I'm glad I didn't.
I mean, I'm sure that's something you miss. I think there's so much brotherhood in the military, especially when you're stuck in some random place outside the country where you're dealing with different things all day. And I know that you had a lot of not just military experience, you had a lot of combat experience.
Oh, yes, definitely. And, you know, it's a whole different world when you know, you're on the other side of people trying to do harm to you. You know, it kind of brings a perspective to enjoying what you do have. You know, I mean, I remember, you know, being over there in the Gulf War, and one of the things that I missed the most and finally wrote home and my family sent it to me was a pillow.
My gosh.
You would not believe, like, the things that you don't have when you're sleeping, like in a tank, you know, every night, and you're kind of rolling up something soft that you can find to put your head on, and you're like, you know, it makes you appreciate the things that you don't have, the ability just to, you know what, I want to run to Chipotle to grab lunch. There's no Chipotle in the middle of the desert. You know what I mean? There's what am I getting, powdered eggs or what? You know what I mean? Whatever they're bringing you, or you're eating, you know, an MRE. So, you know, just those kind of things like that, that people, I think, take for granted here because they've never had to live without it. You know, I mean, to me, that's one of the benefits of being in this country, you know?
Yeah. Where were some of the most special places that you went when you were in the military?
Well, you know, obviously I went to, you know, went through Parris Island, which, you know, everybody on this side of the Mississippi goes to. And then there's the other Marines that go to Hollywood, you know, California, San Diego. But my home station was Camp Pendleton, California. Nice. I served time in, you know, Okinawa. I've been to Guam, Sicily. You know, obviously Okinawa, we went to Japan as well. We did, you know, several maneuvers there. And I ended up, you know, obviously getting deployed, you know, during when Saddam invaded in 1991, you know, when he invaded Kuwait, you know, I ended up in Saudi Arabia, Kuwait. And then a year later, we went back again. So in that short four years of active duty, we were kind of bouncing around a lot.
We talked a little bit about from military to police, but then when you come to a police department, you start at the bottom and you're a captain now. You've worked your way up through the ranks, and obviously that takes time and dedication, but how did that happen? Where are all the different places that you've been?
Okay. Let me just go into it.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, when I started, you know, obviously we had a whole different kind of field training than they do now. They do a lot of pre-training now that we have before these guys actually hit the road. Basically, you know, I was sworn in by the chief in the chief's office and told to show up at, you know, Monday at 0600 hours. And that's when I started my first day. Your first day of FTO was in FTO out on the road with your training officer. So it was a big culture shock because, you know, obviously, you know, you have to make a lot of decisions and, you know, you're, like I tell my young officers, you're a police officer now. You know, you have the authority to take someone's civil liberties and lock them up, and you got to make sure you know what you're doing. So that was a big transition, you know, coming from the military where I kind of knew life and how things were handling, to law enforcement where, you know, you have a book 7 inches thick full of statutes and laws and ordinances and trying not to mess something up, or or being a new officer, having the sergeant or lieutenant yell at you because, you know, you messed something up and did something that you weren't supposed to. So, you know, originally the first, you know, couple years on patrol was a little tough, you know, because you're trying to, you kind of know what you're doing, but you don't really know what you're doing yet.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I talked to my dad. My dad was a cop probably when you started in Terre Haute, Indiana.
I appreciate that. And makes me feel a whole lot younger.
But it's interesting kind of hearing the same story from him as to how training has evolved, because he kind of has the same story as you, is starting, hey, I didn't even really go to the academy. Before I went to the academy, I was already on patrol in field training, and they had on the job training. But it's just really interesting the way that things have changed from
actually
being able to take people's civil liberties away without even having much training, to we would never that now because of liability.
It actually changed a lot because, like, when I went to the police academy, my class was actually the first class that actually took the state exam. You know, prior to actually having a certified state exam, when you went to the class before me, they went to the police academy. And if you graduated with, you know, your grades, you were certified. Mm-hmm. So that was, you know, being the first class to go to the police academy, you know, and, you know, they really didn't know. I always tell everybody they overtopped, because the easiest test we ever took in the police academy was the state exam. We were all done in like 30 minutes. Like, okay, we're good. You know, but that was all transitioning changes.
I mean,
everything's changing in law enforcement. And I think in today's world, going through my career, you know, especially in the last few years, there's been a lot of changes. And then I think the changes come faster, because when I started, you know, obviously there was a lot of, I'm kind of an old timer now, but there was a lot of old timers, you know, and, you know, they kind of it wasn't a big transition from how they policed in 68 when they started to 1994. There wasn't a lot of changes other than the body styles of the patrol cars.
Right. I mean, I think a lot of changes come just because we've made mistakes. That's mm-hmm. how all changes in law enforcement have been made throughout the years. Some mistakes are huge, some are minor, but I think we've evolved to kind of have things where we have them today. And I think a lot of the changes have been really good. You were probably lost when you were just like put on the streets with no training and you're
you're pretty much,
that's how you learn.
Yeah. You kind of learned a lot. I mean, you know, my FTOs, right? I had good FTOs. So they taught me a lot, but they basically, you know, they're teaching you to be a basic police officer. Mm-hmm. They're not teaching you to be Chuck Norris when your first day on the road. You know the basic ins and outs, and they're comfortable. You know, when I did field training, before I let somebody go, I wanted to be comfortable that when they're on their own, that they're able to back me up.
You know,
or, you know, if I need assistance or, you know, I'm not worrying about them not knowing how to write a report right and stuff like that.
What's your best words of wisdom to a new rookie on the street today?
I would listen and learn to the people that have been here. That's where you're going to get a lot of your best stuff. I mean, you can read books, you can read stuff, but until you actually, you know, had the actual experience to be on calls, because when you go to training and you hear when the watch commanders are reviewing a major call for service, the biggest, pay attention and learn. Put mm-hmm. yourself in that position, because, you know, it's the old thing, you know, like in the Marine Corps and even through training here, if you haven't put it through your mind, through a scenario, constantly thinking about, well, if this happens, what do I do? Well, you know, if this happens, what do I do? Because I remember driving around with my FTOs and they were like, okay, you know, we're going to this disturbance. What are you going to do if, God forbid, somebody comes out with a gun?
Right.
Or what are you going to do if somebody's standing in the driveway threatening somebody with a knife? So you have to like go there in your mind before it happens, because then if it happens and you haven't at least thought about something, you're kind of like, all right, now what do I do? And that's the worst thing that can happen being a police officer, is you have to be able to make decisions in a, you know, realistically, sometimes in a split second. You know, everybody's seen videos, you know, the officer's pulling over a guy for rolling through a stop sign. And the next thing you know, they come to find out that this guy's a sovereign citizen and he jumps out with a rifle. You better be able to act quick, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. And so you got your experience as an officer. Mm-hmm. From there, where did you go?
I did about 6.5 years on patrol between mm-hmm. days and nights, and then back to days again. But you always try to tell people, you know, try to find your niche. But as a supervisor, I always tell guys, you know, get a little time in, get seasoned, see what you like to do. You know, some people, you know, they like to do traffic. Some people like to do an investigation. Some people like to, you know, go around and shake hands and kiss babies, you know. But I mean, you got to find what you enjoy doing. And during patrol, I really found out that I enjoyed doing traffic enforcement. And then there was some openings coming up in the motor unit. So I talked to my sergeants and lieutenants at the time, and they did the things to help me get what I needed to. And, you know, I was able to put in for an opening for the motor unit. And, you know, after completing probably one of the toughest courses that I've ever done in my history of the police department is, you know, getting certified to be a motor officer. You know, then I was a Cape Coral Police motor officer for a number of years.
Yeah, we have a lot of pictures. If for those who are viewing instead of listening, we'll post some pictures in, because that's what we were saying. We have a lot of other people that it's like, I'm new. I have no idea who people are, but I know you have a million good stories from all the different motors guys that you worked with, your bikes have changed over the years. Oh, yeah. You know, you had Harley to BMW back to Harley, right?
Yep. Oh yeah, definitely. You know, when I first got hired, they were, you know, if anybody that can remember the old Chips TV show, you know, they were on the Kawasaki 1000s, and then they went to Harleys, mm-hmm. and then, you know, we switched to the BMW, and I came back as a motor sergeant, and, you know, being a Harley police officer rider, we switched back to Harley Davidson's, which the current officers are on now.
I think you talked about it once, just the addition of the pipe that you guys had that was custom made and awesome.
You're talking about the actual exhaust on the.
I think so. I think you had some Harley modification,
when or I
maybe
was on?
It was a BMW. I don't know. I can't remember.
When I was on, or like the new ones.
When you were on, I think you were the one that had it suggested to have that additional exhaust built because it made it louder. Everybody was more visible.
Oh yeah, definitely. Because obviously, anything that comes from the factory. It doesn't really have that sound. And, at that time, we were going to Harleys and, the majors and the chief at the time where we kind of talked them into, aftermarket slip-on pipes to make it a little more throaty. Because we're like, I want people to hear me at that point. You're only on a motorcycle. You got two wheels and a helmet and, pretty cool boots that you get to wear. But
the boots are pretty cool.
we were always like, let's get a little more rumble. So if we're weaving in and out of traffic, people can hear us coming, because everybody doesn't automatically look for a motorcycle. They look for a police car, even though we had like 9,000 lights on these things, red and blue lights. And then the funny part was when the major actually at the time agreed that we could do these pipes, we didn't tell them that they were stamped, off-road use only. luckily it was on the inside underneath the saddlebags. There's a big difference when you can hear them. And, I helped work on, redesigning and building the current model that they're in now. And they all have all the same features, except for their pipes don't say off-road use only.
They're still really cool.
They're pretty cool.
But okay, so you went from patrol sergeant to motor sergeant. You still wear your motors wings, right? Class A?
Actually on my Class A and on my regular. obviously I'm not on my Polo, but I wear that every day because, people don't realize, the requirements to be a motor officer and what you do every day and, chasing down people that are speeding and, less than 1% of police officers in the United States are motor officers. You're a rarity in law enforcement. Not a lot of people want to jump on a Harley Davidson and, somebody drive by at 110 miles an hour and go chase them down through traffic.
Okay, so essentially, once a Marine, always a Marine, but once a motors officer, always a motors officer.
Yeah, because, just not to be biased, but, Marines are they're pretty elite because it is a smaller branch of the military. And, being a motor officer, when I found out, that, 1% of all police officers in the United States are motor officers. I kind of always grafted to trying to be one of the few and the proud.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And so from being a motors officer, what was kind of your next career step?
Well, I did leave the motors full time and was doing full time commercial vehicle enforcement. And then, always the sergeant tests come up. I ended up, taking a few sergeant's boards and I was lucky enough to get promoted. I got promoted after 15 years, which was kind of nice because I got to do a lot of things. I got to, patrol, motors, commercial vehicle enforcement. So I got to do the things that I wanted to do. So I think that made it even better coming back as a sergeant because obviously when back then, when you got promoted, you came back to patrol as, was your initial. And obviously being out of patrol for a while, coming back was a little bit, you're used to like just doing traffic enforcement. Right. Now you got, now you're the sergeant of these officers and they're asking you all these other kinds of questions. And you're like, I can tell you what the statute is for unlawful speed. It was a big switch, but I enjoyed that obviously, one of my first watch commanders, he was a lieutenant at the time. He's now the current chief of police of the Cape Coral Police Department. And I used to joke with him on shift and I used to always tell him, now you're going back. He was a lieutenant. I was a sergeant. And I used to always joke with him on shift going, you're going to be the last chief that I work for. And lo and behold, he is going to be the last chief that I work for. That was kind of like a joke back then, but it ended up coming to fruition.
That's really cool. Have you talked to him about that?
Oh yeah, he knows that. Trust me.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
So, you get to see a lot of people. And obviously being now, it's kind of weird to say you're the longest tenured police officer.
Right.
Because I'm in my 30th year right now. So I've seen a lot of people come and a lot of people go and a lot of people retire, and it's nice to see guys that have come after me that, you know, did the right things and moved through the ranks. And, you know, now I work for them, which is pretty cool.
So what's it like being captain now of patrol, which in my opinion, and I got to work under you a little bit when you were a captain in patrol and a lieutenant in patrol. Mm-hmm. You have the respect of everyone that works for you because you take care of your people. I think you bring that old school mentality mm-hmm. with the new school ideas and really put that together.
Yeah, I try. I try to always, and even when I was a sergeant and a lieutenant, you know, I was a watch commander on night shift for a while, which I loved. People think I was crazy, you know, because I liked working, being a nighttime watch commander, you know. That's where the stuff happens on the road. You know, when I started, you know, not to belittle anybody, but the old timers would be cops work at night, police officers work in the daytime, you know, and what they meant was, is, you know, if you're working at night, you're out, you know, most people, the good people are sleeping.
Yeah.
You know, you're out looking for stuff that's happening. People that are, you know, and in the daytime, they're doing that too. Like you said, a little old school, you know. Everybody here knows me, and that's kind of like my motto, you know, a little old school, to the point where when Chief Sizemore promoted me to captain, one of the conversations we had, and I'm going to tell on him a little bit, but one of the conversations we had is, you know, we want you to, you know, bring a little old school back to patrol.
Yeah.
You know, realize that the patrol bureau commander has their guys back.
Right.
You know, I know what they're going through every day. I know when they get called in for overtime and have to work. Cause I've had to do that. I never forgot those things. And, you know, being at home with your family and, you know, because a couple people had to call off sick and you were the new guy and your phone rings and you're like, hey, sorry to do this, but you know, we're short staffed on the road and we need you to come to work. So I understand those when I'm asking somebody to do that, I understand what they're going through. And going through the conversation when I got promoted to captain, he's like, we want you to bring a little old school back to patrol. And I remember looking at him and making a funny face. And his next comment was, we know all about Branch and all.
So, but that's so cool though. I mean, especially coming from Maryland to be a police officer in Florida, it's a great place to be a police officer and actually get to do your job. But especially for you being the captain for new officers, I know I've heard it from you. I've heard it from them that you actually encourage them to learn, go out there, make mistakes. Mm-hmm. Don't be, you know, obviously use your training experience, all that, but don't be afraid to screw something up because all you're going to do is learn. You're going to get better. Everybody makes mistakes, even police officers. Mm-hmm. And I think just knowing that they have someone that has their back makes all the difference because they're not afraid to go out there and hunt for drugs or make good arrests. And I think that it's really just going to build the future of the police department to be what we need it to be, because need the real police here.
Yeah. That's mm-hmm. what you need. You know, I don't need, you know, I don't need someone to drive around in a marked police car for their entire shift and not look to do anything, not interact with people. You know, some people it's hard for them to interact verbally with people now because of the way we live in society. Right. Now we live in a texting world, a social media world, but to actually look somebody in the eyes and tell them, you know, just quit. I'm telling you to stop, you know, stuff like that. It's a whole different thing than when I got into law enforcement. There was no cell phones,
not even just the conversation in general, but having to have the difficult conversations, right? Like those aren't easy conversations to have in general. You're having to sometimes be, for lack of a better word, confrontational.
Yes, because, you know, we always joke that nobody ever calls the police department to come over and, you know, have Sunday fried chicken dinner. Usually when somebody calls, you know, 911 or they call, they're in crisis.
Right.
You know, so we respond to what people don't want to respond to. You know, we don't want to have to go to people's houses and all the time and hear, you know, that somebody battered their spouse or somebody hurt their kid or you know, somebody was in a bad accident and now they're injured. But that's what we do every day.
Right. That's just the reality of the job, and it's not going anywhere. No, I don't think it doesn't do anyone any good to try to tie our hands behind our back. And you know, I think the training we receive is really good, but it's also important to know not just the law, but what all you can do. And
I look at it like, you know, I've been lucky. You know, I have a good, you know, you got to have something outside of law enforcement too. You know, I'm very thankful. I have a good family. I mean, you know, my family,
your family's great.
You know, I have a supportive wife who, you know, who I love and she loves me, and my kids are now, you know what, the youngest is now older than you probably, but
you have a grandkid, not to throw you under the bus, not to make you feel old.
Yeah, I know. And she's a handful. She's three already. But she, she's just like her noni. she gets a lot of time, you know, and, you know, I have two sons and a daughter, and
right,
you know, they all support what I do, and you know, they worry, but I don't give them reasons to worry, because you know, I kind of like how when I first got into law enforcement, you know, you had, it was a different kind of thinking, you know, from, you know, I used to call them the old timers, you know, they, you know, you didn't wear your emotions on your sleeve. You kind of, you did your job and then you went home, you know, and a lot of people I think did, you know, turned to other things that weren't helpful for them,
right,
you know? So I like now that officers go to a bad incident or a death call or something serious. They talk about it now. They don't have to take it home. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody doesn't, you know, they're young, you know, they may not have a good family base at home yet. You know, they're just young. You know, if you're 22, not a lot of people 22 get married, you know? So they don't have this, you know, that someone at home they can talk to and, you know, feel better. But we do have law enforcement transitioning and changing. We understand that these guys see and gals see things that aren't what normal people see.
Right.
And we try to make sure that, you know, we get them the help if they need to, if they need to go talk to somebody or stuff like that, instead of just, you know, hey, tough it up.
Yeah, that's important.
You know, so, I mean, I think that's, you know, we look at the whole person now, not just the cop.
Yeah. I mean, I brought up before that my dad was a cop, and mm-hmm. back in the day, he told me when they went through kind of what we view, you know, society mm-hmm. would view as something traumatic, they just brush it off or joke about it. They never really got to talk about it. And I think that's probably one of the better things that we've done over time is really say, hey, stop, let's talk about it, do a deep dive. You know, what happened, maybe we could have done something better, but overall it's recognizing that that stuff actually has an impact on people and hopefully addressing it.
You know, I don't want, you know, any of my police officers that work for me, and especially in patrol, because they see a lot, I don't want them to have issues outside of work because of a traumatic call they went on or something like that, which is a big culture change from when I started. And, you know, because a lot of times I have to realize that this, you know, these are good things. You know, right. Sometimes when I hear, you know, somebody's, you know, having a hard time, or one of my lieutenants say, yeah, they went to this type of call and, you know, kind of bothered them, you know, and stuff like that. And I go, I understand that. Let's send them home. Let's let them, you know, I'd rather him go home, relax, or her for the rest of the day, come back in, you know, clear head, ready to go to work.
Yeah.
You know, instead of being out there worrying about something, and God, you need to be worrying about what you're doing when you're a police officer, not something else.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Because you're responsible for yourself, your buddies, and the people the community that you serve.
Okay. So for anyone who's listening who may not know, what exactly is it like a day in the life of a patrol officer?
Well, just to explain, you know, to keep it kind of simple, we have two day shifts and two patrol shifts, you know, that are all supervised by a lieutenant and their respective sergeants. Our shifts are split in two times. You know, the first part of each shift, on day shift, they come in at 6 o'clock in the morning. The second half comes in at 7, and vice versa. They got to come in. And, you know, one of the big changes since I've been in law enforcement is the use of a body camera. So they come in and get their equipment, their body cameras, get ready for the day, and they have a roll call. Basically, in a roll call is all those officers that are working at that respective time. You know, they sit down, and the sergeants and the lieutenants on the shifts go over any information or something that came down through the chain of command that they need to go over for training or stuff like that. And it's kind of a good time for everybody to kind of get their game face on. I always looked at it like, you know, I played football. So you looked at it like right before you hit the game, you know, the coach come in and kind of talk to you and get you all revved up, ready to go. And,
yeah,
you know, let's go out there and hit it and be safe, you know, like, and they watch the TV shows, you know. And then obviously those officers are each assigned a specific zone of this, the district or the area that they work in the city. And while they're not responding to a call for service, at that time, they are actively looking for people that are violating traffic laws. You're checking nighttime, you know, they're checking closed businesses to make sure that nobody's hanging out in the alley trying to break in, make, you know, you're doing police work when you're not dedicated time. And, you know, obviously in that time, you know, they're working on their, their plethora of reports that they have to do. That's another big change. Right. So, you know, there's a lot of reports that we do and a lot of stuff that's added to reports that we do for information that maybe wasn't tracked before, but now it's tracked, you know, because we need to know these things. And then, you know, they work a 12-hour shift. So they try to transition towards the closing time and then hopefully they get to go home on time. But if not, if they're stuck, you know, then, you know, there is, you know, they get stuck working overtime. You can't, you know, if you made an arrest at 5:30, you can't go, all right,
see ya.
At 6 o'clock, I'm out. You know, you have to go through the whole, you have to finish the whole thing. But that's pretty much normal day, night, you know, other, you know, and you're always responding to different things. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing that I did getting into law enforcement. You know, I kind of realized that just talking to some people that I knew that, you know, had gotten into law enforcement, not family, but like friends that I knew, it's never the same thing. You might get the same, you know, you're responding to a disturbance call. Well, every disturbance call is called a disturbance call, but every one is different people, different things. It's, you're never, it's not monotonous.
Right.
No. You know, it's always different. It's always different, you know, and that's what's always kind of attracted me to this day, still to law enforcement. You know, even when I was a lieutenant, I used to like to roll on calls a lot because, you know, just to kind of keep in the game. But
it's always interesting.
It's always interesting, you know, and, you know, the things we find interesting, you know, we have, you know, I mean, you're a police officer. We have weird senses of humor. So,
yeah, we definitely do. I think and I think that's kind of one of the interesting things is going from military to police work is with the military. You always knew that people were kind of out to get you. Mm. You always knew exactly who your enemy was, even if you didn't know where they were, what they had. But then switching over to law enforcement, it's like you never know how things, you know, who's against you, who's for you, who has a gun, who doesn't, who has a gun that wants to use it against you is really what we look at down here.
Oh, yeah. I think, live in the South, you know, my grandma, you know, she's always had a gun, always been a shoot. So she was 90 years old.
Your grandma?
Oh, yeah.
So, that's amazing. And
she was actually a World War II veteran. Her and my grandpa met serving in Burma underneath Patton, you know, General Patton. So it goes back to my family history of everybody serving in the military.
Right.
Yeah, she was a nurse in the Army during World War II.
You don't find very many women that served in the military back then. That's really cool. Mm-hmm.
That is awesome.
Oh yeah, she was a tough, you know, she's about the same height as my wife, believe it or not.
How tall is that?
Five. I'm not gonna say
not
five,
very tall.
Teeny.
5 feet and a half inches.
That's awesome.
You know, her license may say 5'1", but probably 5 feet.
That's awesome.
You know, we realize that we live in the South and we do, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, carry firearms.
Yeah.
But you never know. I treated every car and I try to teach every officer that's ever worked for me, you treat everybody you come in contact with like they're armed until you know they're not. I don't trust you till I've verified, you know what I mean? So if you go into that situation that when I'm making this traffic stop for somebody just rolling a stop sign, that I'm going to treat them like the vehicle is armed. Not that we change who we do, but be aware of what's going on. Be aware of the clues and body actions and demeanor and all that stuff. You have to always be aware. You know, I'm going to tell on myself, you know, because it does happen. You know, we all kind of get tunnel vision and stuff like that. But I remember one traffic stop that I did as a motor officer, you know, because we were, you know, our role was, you know, was try to catch people violating the law and move on to the next. You know, we didn't want to spend a lot of time if we didn't have to. It was kind of a business transaction and we went around and looked for somebody else. I pulled a car over. I was all, you know, kind of excited. They were doing like 92 miles an hour on Pine Island Road. And believe it or not, it was in a convertible Corvette. So I walk up to the guy, introduce myself, and the convertible top's down. So you can see all in there. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of holding on to a steering wheel and I get his information. I go back and working on my citation, and I walk back up, and he still got his hands in the same spot that it was when I pulled him over.
Tells you a lot.
And I go, are your hands still holding on the steering wheel? He goes, man, I'm not moving. He has a concealed weapons permit, and he had a firearm in his vehicle. He had a firearm. He's like, I wasn't moving. But it was visible, but I didn't see it because I was more worried about, you know, I got this guy speeding and I'm going to write this ticket, you know, and I always use that excuse, you know, that explanation when I'm talking to younger officers and stuff like that. You can't, just because you get excited because, you know, maybe it's a good stop or you pull the guy over and you smell drugs coming out of the car. Don't forget everything else that you're supposed to look for.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
That was one of the biggest transitions coming from being a cop in Maryland to being a cop in Florida. Mm-hmm. Is in Maryland, really nobody had a gun unless they could have a gun. Mm-hmm. I think law enforcement could always carry. It wasn't, but they don't even just give out concealed carry to just anybody. And then we come down here and Joe Schmo can have a gun. You know, I came across a traffic stop and this guy had an extended mag in his glove box and he was just acting really weird. And it's like, I mean, you know, you can run the gun, you can make sure it's not stolen, but outside that, it's really strange feeling that they're allowed to have it, even though you know something's wrong.
Yeah.
And most, most people down here who have guns, hopefully they're trained, they know how to use them, and most people are good about them. Mm-hmm. I love the people on traffic stops who say, hey, just letting you know, like, I have a concealed carry, I'm carrying, it's here.
Yeah.
That is the greatest thing, and obviously you don't let your guard down still, but it's just nice when people let you know,
it's nice to always
know that. I'm being transparent with you so that you feel safe too.
Because those are the people that, you know, should have guns. They're the people that are respectful to law enforcement when they have an interaction and they say, you know, sir, ma'am, just to let you know, I do have a concealed weapons permit and I do have a firearm in the vehicle. And then, you know, where is the firearm? Okay, as long as you don't go reaching anywhere for your, you know, we'll be good.
Yep.
You know, because they're legally allowed to carry a firearm in their vehicle if they're legal. You know what I mean? So, you know.
Very different.
Different world.
Definitely. Captain Chenault, is there anything else that you want to talk about while we have you here on the Cape Copcast?
I don't know. Other than, you know, I'm pretty proud that I was able to do this.
We're proud to have you.
Yeah.
One of our first guests.
Yeah.
We love it.
Hopefully everybody out there likes it. And
they will.
Hits the like button. I have a reputation to upkeep now in the police department with numbers of likes, right?
In case for those who didn't know, the video we mentioned at the beginning was kind of like one of the record-breaking videos for us. And, you know, that's when we were first starting out. You know, in Cape Coral, we wear red on Fridays. Yeah. I mean, we love hiring prior military, people with all kinds of experience, because I think that brings a lot to the table.
For
it's
sure.
kind of already having tactics and a lot of different room clearing dynamics and just the overall, you know, and especially being a Marine.
And we have an Iwo Jima statue coming on veterans right there.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of nice seeing that when I give it a little salute every time I drive by, you know, when coming and going, because that's a sign of the Marine Corps right there.
Yep.
Yeah. But no, we're really lucky to have you here. I think it's going to be a big loss one day when you retire. Hopefully it's not too soon.
Not too soon.
Not too soon.
But no, we love having you. Thanks for being our guest and sharing a little bit more of your story. And I'm sure everybody is really going to enjoy it too.
I hope so.
I completely agree. Thank you so much for being here with us today. We had so much fun having you. And we'll see you next time, Captain Chenault.
All right, cool.
Thank you for listening to the Cape Copcast, where we dive into the heart of the Cape Coral Police Department safety initiatives, community relations, and the insightful stories of different officers that make up our department.
Please like and share our podcast. If you have feedback, you can email capepdpao@capecoral.gov. And remember to follow us on social media. Our handle is @CapePD on all major platforms. Stay safe, stay Cape.